So my title, of course, is Intensified Grazing Management of the Northern Plains. Basically, it's a bigger term for grazing systems and looking at harvest and grazing efficiency of range and pasture lands. So if you look at the issues in the livestock industry in terms of forage production or forage management, livestock numbers continue to decline in the U.S. and have for probably the last 10 years. If you look at land prices, they've increased 2 to 3-fold in the last 10 years. So in terms of efficiency of land, of using your land base, because of the high cost of land, you can't afford to buy it, so you try to be more efficient on the land you have. If you look at feed costs, they've more than doubled, depending on where you're at in the country, to feed a cow or to feed a sheep. And so you've got to make that as more efficient as you can in terms of land use. And that's where the cover crops have become very popular in the Northern Plains as a way to dual crop a system and get more feed off that for late season grazing to cheapen up your costs. If you look at cattle prices, of course, for those of you who have any cattle, they're at all-time highs. So there's money in the cattle business. If we can make it efficient, you can really make money in the business. So in terms of a grazing manager, the way for livestock growers is to do is try to create the same amount of create more money on the same land base. Whether you're doing residue grazing, you're doing cover crops, you're doing tame grass pastures, or native range, the concept is to make more with the same base you have. And so that's kind of where we're going to fall today. So we look at increasing grazing efficiency, and especially trying to put more of that forage through the cow and less waste, is you try to modify the grazing behavior of the animal. So you're actually trying to manipulate how those animals graze to get better uniform use of the resource. If you look at techniques that we're using are grazing systems. Most of you are familiar with grazing systems, and they can range from a simple 2-pasture system to I've seen as many as a 42-pasture system. And so the more intensive you get, you get some of a benefit as you go up that level to where you pass that threshold. The big trick is trying to find the desired stock density to get more efficiency in your consumption of the animals. And I'll show you what I mean. And so I visit with livestock producers, trying to get the concept across on stock density to improve efficiency is where we're going to go today. So if you look at stock density, and all stock density is a function of numbers of cattle or numbers of livestock. Any of you had range science courses? So a few of you had. So you're all familiar with animal unit months. Stocking density has nothing to do with animal unit months. It's basically how many animals you graze on a given number of acres. So time is irrelevant when it comes to stock density. And so if you look at stock density, an example to your right, is a light stock density. Versus in the bottom is a heavy stock density. This is actually a picture of some mob grazing done out of Nebraska. Mob grazing is not an efficient grazing strategy. Let me get that straight right up front. We talk about mob grazing as ways to enhance use of a resource. It actually is not efficient. What it does is it actually creates a system where you trample the vegetation down to the ground to get litter on the ground surface. That's the goal of a mob grazing system. That's not very efficient in terms of forage consumption. But the concept is you try to find some level of a stock density ratio to improve the efficiency of the resource. So you got this level of light to heavy grazing. So the question I get asked from producers is, what is a proper stock density? And of course, there's no real answer to what the proper stock density is. It varies due to environmental constraints, moisture conditions, topography, soils, so it's quite different. But you can get the concept across that when you can physically see when you've reached the stock density high enough to where you change the behavior of the animals, which is what your objective is. So it needs to be heavy enough to change your grazing of cows. How many of you watch cows graze? Okay? Cows graze, when they go out to a pasture, they pick and choose what they want, and if they have their options, they'll be spread out across the pasture. Correct? How many of you have watched sheep graze? A few of you have. So sheep graze in a flocking pattern. They move out in a flock, and they kind of cover a pasture, and they circle around it and use it like a flock. You can actually get cattle to graze in a flocking pattern by changing their behavior. You get the stock density high enough, they will graze like sheep. And that's what the objective is. So if you look at the examples, it needs to be heavy enough to change behavior, but not too heavy enough to where you have a negative effect. The mob grazing concept, of course, is to get heavy enough to get litter to the ground, like the one picture. The bottom picture, of course, is out of Texas. That's an extremely high level of cattle. The trick is to minimize double biting of the vegetation. What you want to do is come across, graze the vegetation once, move cattle on to the next cell or next piece of property. Allow the grass to recover. The trick is to get recovery so you don't have damage or long-term stress of the grass species, if that makes sense. So you're trying to minimize multiple bites, and I'm going to show you some of the data on this as we go through the talk. You know, I'm an extension person, and if you have a question, do not be afraid to ask the question. And I can repeat it as well as we go for the. But if it's something just kind of bugging you, don't be afraid to ask it. So the big thing we try to do with grazing management is to eliminate free choice of grazing by a cow. So this is a picture from southwest North Dakota. Cattle obviously have easily free choice on a large acre of land, so you get lots of standing dead. You got cows scattered throughout the landscape. This would be a poor example of efficiency of a grazing system. This is what you see at the end of the season. You see this wolfy plants, and you see overgrazing. All in the same pasture, you'll see overgrazing and undergrazing. And trying to create as a uniformity, I saw some nice pictures up earlier of some nice green lush vegetation, very uniform look to them. The trick is to make it look that way in November and December when you kind of get your full use on your season. So this is what we try not to get with grazing systems. We also need to eliminate overgrazing. So no matter what we teach in terms of concepts, we still need to not overgraze a pasture. This is true no matter what I'm grazing. Overgrazing is the greatest negative impact on plant health, plant vigor, and production. On a worldwide basis, it's the number one reason why we have ecological problems with rangelands in the world, is overgrazing processes. In the U.S., we've actually had a shift in grazing patterns where we're actually seeing more and more undergrazing than overgrazing because of the shift in the environmental shifts were going on public lands. We're trying to promote less grazing on public lands, move more cattle off, and we're seeing actually a flip-flop of what we see at a world basis in terms of overgrazing. But I want to show you the impacts of overgrazing versus light grazing or non-grazing. And of course, this does vary where you're at in the U.S. But so what we're trying to do is the question is how to modify grazing behavior. And why do we need to know? For a producer, I say, why do I need to even know? Just tell me what to do. So try to show them why we need to know to change this behavior. And, of course, the intent is to receive a greater return in terms of dollars from the resource while improving range or pasture proper function, if that makes sense. So I'm going to show you about improving grazing efficiency. Now, those of you who took range management, you're probably familiar with the take half, leave half philosophy of range management. That philosophy is an old philosophy that, of course, there's always some debate on the total accuracies of it. But in terms of land managers, if you're a public land manager or private land managers, we still try to leave a sufficient cover on the resource to keep a healthy stand of vegetation, if that makes sense. So we still try to leave 40 to 50%, depending on the species of grass you're consuming. So what you're trying to do is find ways to be more efficient on grazing that half that's going to be consumed. So if you look at a plant growth, about the bottom third of the plant is where half of your plant vigor occurs. So that's where your weight in terms of half your weight is about the bottom 3 to 4 inches, depending on the species. What we're going to consume is about 25% of it. So in terms of actually proper management, in terms of efficiency, rule of thumb is about a quarter of the total weight goes to the cow. You leave about half of it there for plant health, and the other quarter is then lost through natural senescence, trampling, wildlife, or whatever. And so the efficiency occurs, of course, in that 25%. You know, I'm 50 years old and I drink Diet Mountain Dew. But to find Diet Mountain Dew in Long Beach was not very easy. So I had to settle for Diet Dr. Pepper, so I didn't need to drink. So if you look at the literature on grazing systems, the idea, of course, in grazing systems, you try to improve stock numbers on the same land base. And there's been some philosophies on does grazing systems work or not. And if you look at the paper that was published in 08 by Brisky, it shows grazing systems were no different than season-long grazing. Of course, the fallacy of that paper was it only looked at livestock performance and herbage production. Never looked at efficiency. If you look at the papers that came out in 2010, 2011, they do look at efficiency more in terms of grazing systems. So if you look at what we're trying to fix here, and if you look at the data, what we're trying to do is capture what is lost through senescence. Now, I don't care what species of forage you're consuming, you're going to get natural growth and senescence of a plant species. And what you're trying to do is consume what's going to be senesced. That's an improvement of grazing efficiency. And I'll show you that some examples here. So if you just look at, we do some simple grazing systems in North Dakota over the last 20 years, from 4 pasture to 8 pasture systems. And we've gotten grazing efficiency up to 35%. with these systems without having a difference in disappearance of forages. For every 1% improvement in grazing efficiency, you get a 4% increase in stocking rate. So for a 10% efficiency in this study that we looked at, we had a 40% increase in stocking rate on the same land base without affecting degree of disappearance. Currently, the data shows out of Sandy Smart's paper in 2010 that we published, we've got as high as 42% efficiency in a grazing system. So that would be a 72% increase in stocking rate on the same land base without having a higher degree of disappearance. Now, we have producers who are more efficient than that. If you've been around as long as I've been around, we have a number of producers who have doubled their stocking rates through the improved grazing management systems. What happens is most of the data, most of the research never lasts more than 6 years. In fact, if you look at Briski's paper, they looked at 43 different publications. Only six of them were longer than 6 years, and only three of them were longer than 25 years. Most, yes?
I wanted you to finish. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. My grazing efficiency is determined as consumption of the forage that's available. So if you produce 1,000 pounds of forage and you want to consume as much of that without overgrazing, season-long grazing, on the average, it would be 300 pounds, give or take, without having a detrimental impact because of how they consume. So if I can actually get those cows to consume 400 pounds or 450 without overgrazing it, that's an improvement in terms of, well, it's actually called harvest efficiency. But we're doing it through the cow, so it's a grazing efficiency. So what we're trying to do is take the same land base, add more animals, because we're more efficient in consuming it without overgrazing the resource.
It's kind of a measure of conservancy, being conservative.
Correct. Yeah, and that's what, I mean, to me, season-long grazing is very conservative. But it's also very inefficient. It's also, and I don't care what I'm grazing. If I'm grazing 1,000 acres of orchard grass, my cows are going to be very inefficient and they're going to still cover that pasture. But if I can cut it, put it into a grazing system where I'm forcing then instead of 1,000 acres, that same number of header on 100 acres, I'm going to get much more efficiency in my consumption of that resource. I'll show you that, and I have some examples on this. Does that make sense? So this is just going to show, you know, on the concepts of efficiency of what you should leave and what you should take. If that makes sense. So we still talk about overgrazing, and there's some cool data in North Dakota that looks at overgrazing impacts. But we're trying to get improvement of efficiency without overgrazing the resource. This is especially true for rangelands, because you overgraze rangelands, you get a major shift in species composition change from desirable to undesirable species. And so as a range ecologist, we really need to minimize overgrazing. But look, this is some data by Bob Patton. He published in 2009, and it looks at the impacts of grazing pressure on forage production potential or herbage production over time. So if you look at to your left, and I'm sorry, this is actually in pounds per acre. I should have modified it for kilograms. To the bottom are the treatments. So you have no grazing is none. Moderate grazing is taking one-third of the biomass removed, leaving two-thirds out there. That's a moderate stocking rate. The full is the take half, leave half philosophy. So 52% is consumed or disappears, I should say, and 40% is left. Heavy grazing is 63% of its consumed or disappeared, and extreme is about three-fourths of its consumed or disappeared. And if you look at production, so if you look at production produced, moderate to full grazing produced more biomass over time or remained more production out there than non-use or overgrazing. So you can see the impact of overgrazing, which is heavy grazing of about 10% more, is you lose about 20% of your production potential over time. With extreme grazing, it's about 26%. Also, if you leave it idle, you lose about 13%. So if I just showed you earlier a picture of the classic season long, we see both the overgrazing in a classic season long and light grazing in a season long pasture. So we're creating an inefficient system that will not be maximizing its potential. So in terms of grazing systems, we do see a bump in terms of stocking rate over time because of the efficiency of the system over time, because we're getting this not negative effect. If you notice on the previous slide, if I forgot to go backwards, need my glasses for that. If you notice the moderate and full use grazing, there's no difference. So as a livestock producer, we want to maximize production. We're going to be closer to full use. If you're worried about wildlife, trying to improve more wildlife habitat, you'd be more at the moderate use to create more structure for wildlife, depending on your goals of your resources. But in terms of relevance of production, they both produce the same when they left over time. Yes, sir.
Are you showing a combined efficiency of more than one graze over?
In this study, this is a one graze over in the end. And so at the end of the season, he'd get his production. And this was a compilation of years. So over time, this is after 16 years of research, this is what production would be. So if you look at season-long grazing, and I love using the analogy of this. If you look at how cows graze, they're most livestock, especially cattle, tend to be lazy. They usually graze near water sources, and they pick the best, and they consume the best. And it's just like if you and I went to a buffet. I really like meat, and I really like potatoes, and I really like dessert. So when I go to a buffet, think of a cow on season-long grazing, she's basically looking at a buffet. And when I go to a buffet, I consume meat and potatoes and dessert. The first time, the second time, the third time. And with season-long grazing, they have that option. They're going to graze as much as they want. They tend to overgraze, and they'll graze the best, and they leave the rest. And so with a grazing system, what you're trying to do is double, triple, quadruple the stock density. So now if we all go to that buffet at the same time, and you beat me to the chicken, now I got to eat something else. And cows become competitors when they consume or graze in a higher stock density. They will start to eat something else they didn't prefer to eat. So they become less selective, whether it's a wolf plant or whether it's a different species. You also see an impact in intake. And the more you do this, the higher you get in terms of intensity, you also see less intake. So there's actually been some research that shows you get a detriment in terms of performance. So there's a fine line of being too high in terms of your intensity in terms of performance, and producers will deal with that. So in this case, we quadrupled the stock density. So you create natural deferment in your system. As you move your cows through, you get natural recovery. The Northern Plains, we really have a nice flush of spring and fall growth of grass. So we actually, twice over works great for us. We'll graze it in the spring, summer, and we'll come back and regraze that regrowth because we have it. It's high quality, you get performance in it, and you get a nice return in your livestock. And it doesn't work everywhere. I would never do this in California. I'd never do this in Arizona or New Mexico. I don't have the regrowth potential, no matter what species I use. But it fits well when you got the moisture in the system. All right, so if you look at actually grazing, I'm sorry, I should have brought some water up here. This is some data out of Washington. When they looked at tiller bites, percent of tillers bitten once with a double increase in terms of stock density. So the red bar represents the normal stock density. The blue bar represents a double stock density. And so you can see how many plants were bit once based on the stock density. If you just look at 4 days into the system, so they grazed for 24 days, 12 days on the double stock, 24 on the single stock. On day four, roughly 80% of all plants were grazed once under a double stock density versus the normal stock density. Only 20% were grazed once at day four. The quicker we can graze a plant, the reduction of senescence or maturation will occur. So we can actually keep quality higher in the system. This is a one-time bite. You can see all plants reached about 90 to 95% bitten once in this design. The trick is try to get them as done as often, as quick as you can, so you can rotate out of the system into a new cell. If you look at how many plants were bit twice, and the trick is, if you look at the data on plants, in terms of plant vigor and death of plants, the more times they're bit while they're actively growing, the more stress occurs and the loss of biomass occurs. And eventually, over time, you can get loss of plants. Yes, ma'am. Well, in this study, they had marked all the plants. So they would be able to come out there every day and see these plants were bit once. And so you'd mark it. I mean, this study must have sucked to do. That's all I got to say. but they'd come out every day, and they'd be able to tell if it was bit once, twice. They actually monitored for three bites. And I'm not showing you three bites today. But they got to the level of how many times were a bite. And so it was over a 24-hour period. They had two grad students on the trial. So it was a very intensive study. Great question. So if you look at this study here, if you look at the 4 days, where I showed you earlier on bit once, there's virtually no difference. 5% to 8% were consumed twice. But if you just go to 8 days out, now roughly 50% of all plants were bit twice. The literature clearly shows the impacts on plant health with multiple bites because it impacts root development and root growth. So the grazing system's designed to get that one time over, you then move out. Does that make sense? It all leads to a story, I'm hoping, in the end. So if you look at plant growth, and my big thing I talk about producers is if you can consume a plant where you got enough moisture and you come off it and you get regrowth, that's really free grass because it's going to produce X amount of biomass. And if I consume it and it regrows it, that's free consumption. That's efficiency in your system. So this occurs obviously with cell elongation. So as long as we graze the grass above, I'm not telling you guys anything new, above its growing point, it will continue to elongate. You also change the carbon-nitrogen cycle, so you also create tiller development. Over time, you can create elongation in tillers in a system to thicken up a stand or to keep the plant growing. So if you look at just in this example, we graze above the growing point, we get the free grazing. So as a producer, it's improving the efficiency of not doing it versus doing it. So if I had 1,000 plants in a pasture, and my system's designed and I only grazed 300 of them over that 2-week period, that's not very efficient if I could graze 800 of them to allow them to elongate and get free grazing, especially if I rotate out of it. Does that make sense? So if you, this is a picture by Calhoun, North Carolina. It just shows a picture of cell elongation after a tiller, after a growth, after a cutting event. You know, what's probably hardest to comprehend is the intake consumption by cattle. You know, as you increase stock density, you do actually reduce intake. You know, we did some cover crop work at Streeter. We're about 6 years into it, and I was always amazed. You know, if you read the book, it tells you a cow should consume 30 pounds of forage per day to maintain production, right? But, you know, the cows never read the books. And so the higher the quality, the more they consume. And we had cows consuming close to 45 to 50 pounds a day when they didn't need to consume 45 to 55 pounds a day. So a grazing system, if you can get it fine-tuned enough to get consumption to where it should be at, 30 pounds a day, 35 pounds a day, without affecting performance, that's an improvement in efficiency. And I'm going to show you some data. So if you think about this, you know, it's the same way with the buffet effect. If there's just one person at a buffet, you're going to eat as much. And I really do eat a lot at a buffet. It's not very good. But if there's a lot of people at a buffet, I do tend to eat less because the competition or selection. I really don't like vegetables, for one, so I'll skip the vegetables and leave. But the concept, kind of, as you can see, what gets to the point. This is some data by Kirby and Barker in 2099. And they looked at twice over rotation and short-duration grazing systems compared to season-long grazing. So your far left bar is percent. The stocking rate, the red bar, is season-long grazing. So there's virtually, that's your base. The season short-duration grazing was stocked at 43% on the average of the 10 years. The twice-over was stocked at 38% above the season-long after 10 years of the study. If you look at degree of disappearance, the threshold we look at is 40 to 50%. That'd be the take half, leave half for full use. On the average, we were right around 52 to 55% degree of disappearance, even though our stocking rates were roughly 40% higher. So if you look at forage allowance to those livestock, the season long, they are basically allowance in terms of intake was 46 pounds a day. Under the rotation systems, it was 31 pounds a day to get the exact same degree of disappearance. That's efficiency in the system. I did not overgraze the pastures. I was 40% higher in stocking rate, and I'll show you performance next. And we had no difference in performance. That's what I mean by efficiency. So if you look at livestock performance or production, you know, the data on grazing systems, there is really no benefit to grazing systems in terms of enhancing performance, with the exception of the data that goes for more than 10 to 20 years. And you can't break that out in terms of was it improvement in genetics, was it improvement in management, was it improvement in whatever. But on the average, you can't support, there's no data to support improvement in performance. Our data showed the same thing. I mean, our cows in the season-long average 0.9 pounds a day gain. Our cows in the rotation were 0.8 pounds a day gain. No difference in terms of statistics. In terms of calf performance, our season-long was 2.4. Our rotation was 2.3. They were not statistically different in terms of performance of the calves. The benefit, of course, is in terms of pounds of red meat produced per acre. Our season-long pasture produced 45 pounds. Our rotation systems produced 63 pounds. That's 18 pounds more red beef per acre with rotation system. If I'm running 1,000 acres, that's 18,000 pounds more. At a buck 50 calves, that's $27,000 more each year than season-long grazing. That's what sells a cattle producer to think about grazing systems. My goal is to make more money, but my goal is also is to maintain healthy ecosystems and functioning landscapes. And so the data clearly shows if I don't overgraze it, I'm going to maintain performance in terms of the resources. I also know that over time, we could see that if you look at the data that goes more than 10 years, they actually produce more biomass because they get a better stand of grass that are healthier, and then we also get better habitat. And so that usually sells for livestock producers, if that makes sense. So if you look at distribution of livestock, you know, our main goal is actually to create, minimize patchiness of grazing, create uniformity in the system. So we get that bite effect, we get that efficiency and regrowth, so we can be more efficient in the grazing system. And you actually create competitors in terms of grazers. Now, I know if I have a monoculture, orchard grass, or Bermuda grass, it's really irrelevant. You know, the difference would be if you have woolpea plants. In rangelands, it's different because of the diversity of plants in the mix. And we can get cattle to consume plants they normally wouldn't eat, whether it's down south, this is Lespediza. Up north, we got buckbrush that really gets consumed. We can get cows to consume plants that they normally wouldn't consume otherwise in terms of a range resource. And that becomes more efficient in terms of use. So kind of in summary, you know, improved grazing efficiency can occur anywhere in the world. The difference is it takes moisture to do it. So in terms of more arid climates, efficiency is much smaller or even captured. Where we have moisture, of course, it becomes very, very important. You do need to change grazing behavior. So I can't give you a silver bullet on what the number is, but once you can physically see behavior change and how they rotate, you know you've reached that threshold where they're going to change their behavior in terms of grazing patterns. It takes water to create regrowth. So in terms of environments where we have moisture, we get better returns in terms of efficiency, whether on the North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, Ohio, Florida. They're much better, of course, than Arizona, New Mexico, California. It's just the way it is. It works better on cool season grasses because they regrow more effectively. They're not as efficient plant, but the regrowth seems to be better in terms of palatability as well. Some of the warm seasons that are very rhizomatous, like Bermuda grass and Big Blue, you'll also see a respond. It just seems cool seasons do better. So the goal, of course, is to consume more without losing it through senescence. It's kind of the big difference in terms of the system and get more regrowth. That's my last slide. I don't know what time it was. So hopefully the concept, of course, as a range ecologist on pasture are still the same. What we've done, of course, in some of our pasture management is we'll do a single hot wire fence. Instead of giving them the whole pasture, we give them 1/6 of the pasture and then move that fence. Because I know if I get the stock density up, the data clearly shows out of Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, you can improve efficiency of up to 35% with moving a hot wire, temporary versus not. That's an efficiency to try to achieve. Yes?
The last comment you had about water and more fit, in order to gain that efficiency, you need available water.
Sure.
You also make the point that it works best with cool season grass. I'm kind of saying the same thing there. I mean, in my mind, anyway, all plants need water, but the cool season grass has suffered the most.
I get your point. I don't know if I agree with your point, but I follow your point. I mean, the question he had was, I talked about it works better with when you got moisture. It also works better with cool season versus warm season. And I don't know what your name was, but so the cool season, obviously, cool season grasses require more water because they're less efficient. So is it the same, am I making the same point or not versus warm seasons? Correct?
That's correct.
And I mean, there are obviously warm seasons like Bermuda grass, which will tiller, or even though they're stoloniferous plants, if you graze them, they'll regrow. Correct? So they take less water to do it as well. But the concept is still there. I mean, if you have Bermuda grass, my point is, 1,000 acres of Bermuda grass, if I gave my cows all 1,000 acres at one time, they're going to be less efficient than if I gave them 100 acres at a time, whether I'm Bermuda grass or orchard grass. And you're right. Cool season grasses work better because of those two concepts. But I don't want to rule out warm season as a whole because of that. Yes, sir.
I'd like to kind of work through your thinking a little bit relative to the response to I don't like your use of the term mob stalking in this case, but that's discussion for another matter, another day. But just the shift to a small paddock, rapid rotation type system. All right. So you're suggesting that in the short term, at least, there's no difference in average daily gain between some season, you're calling season long, and is that correct?
Correct. That's what the literature would support.
Right. Okay. But you are seeing an increase in gain per unit land area, right?
Correct.
And so you're attributing that short-term response to an increase in efficiency, increase in harvest efficiency. Is that fair?
Is it? Correct, assuming that my goal is to still leave half, take half.
Right, okay. So then what I'd really like to get at is then in the longer term, you said maybe up to 10 years without really seeing any impact on average daily gain.
That's based on the literature. I wouldn't support that. I mean, I've seen it better on private producers, but anyway.
Okay. Do you have any, what's your feeling, and I'll get to a question eventually.
Sure.
what is your feeling about the impact of that transition in stocking strategy on growth rate?
Growth rate of vegetation or animals?
Of plants.
Okay.
Yeah. And then on what's accounting then for the longer term benefit that you're expecting to see? Is that related to species composition change?
I'm not sure if I can repeat that question.
All right, two questions. So you're suggesting that grazing efficiency, harvest efficiency is accounting for that major short-term change in increase in gain per unit land area. Is there a component of plant growth rate that could also be responsible for that? So that's question A.
So the question is there a component of plant growth rate?
Right.
That where I get the efficiency?
That increases your stocking rate that accounts for that increase in gain per unit land area.
Okay. Did I repeat the question right? I don't know if I repeat the question at all. I didn't get your question. I can't repeat the question. Let me ask. The question is in the short term, do I get more plant production through the efficiency or not? Or do I get, or and do I achieve it over a long term period? Because I think in the short term, the efficiency comes from cell elongation. Or efficiency in terms of consumption. That's not senesced. But in the long term, I think we do create more tillers, because we do create a tiller dynamic, especially with rhizomatous grasses, with bunch grass that's of course different. We get more tillers, which then fills in a stand bunch grasses fill in as well over time, because some bunch of grasses are actually somewhat rhizomatous in nature. So over time, we actually do get a thicker stand of vegetation, which then gives me more biomass in time. So it's kind of the benefit to me in the short, and I tell these producers, my initial benefit is cell elongation and capturing the elongation and trying to capture what would normally be senesced through the cow, through more efficiency in terms of consumption. I don't see an increase in production. And the literature would show that there's no benefit in terms of a short-term more production because of the efficiency. I don't produce more than, if I produce 2,000 pounds, my system's not going to do more than 2,000 pounds in a year, two or three. But I think the long-term data does support, and I mean that after 10, 20 years, that we actually get more biomass produced over time, whether it's through more tillers or healthier plants. I don't know. Did that answer your question at all?
Yeah, I've reviewed the pasture literature fairly significantly, and mm-hmm. I would say that I agree with you that there's no effect of that change in management based on the pasture literature mm-hmm. in terms of individual animal performance. There is a response in terms of gain per unit banked area associated with an increase in stocking rate, and that increase in stocking rate is a function of a couple of things. One, increased harvest efficiency, and two, an increase in the average LAI of that pasture because you're avoiding slot grazing and overgrazing in particular areas, and so that you are actually experiencing an increase in stocking rate associated with greater average LAI, which is increasing short-term pasture production. So I would argue that those two factors are acting in tandem to get that increase in animal performance per unit land area that you're observing.
Sure.
And then in the longer term, you may actually be showing some shifts in botanical composition or perhaps in percent cover that are then perhaps going to translate even perhaps into superior individual animal performance over the long term.
You said that very elegantly, and I meant to say the same thing. but we basically agree with it. I didn't look at the on the pastures. That's the other component. But I mean, I would agree.
Thanks.
Well, thank you. Yes, sir.
Wouldn't the effect on your season-long productivity have to do with the differing amounts of moisture that you have on a regional basis? Depending on the species you have, your growth rate of the regrowth will slow down, but, you know, there's a trade-off between senescence and growth in there somewhere.
Sure.
But in some locations, they're going to be more responsive to the extra growth plus extra efficiency.
So the question was in terms of the moisture obviously plays a major role in the seasonal, in the species. When you talk about season-long grazing, and that's absolutely correct. One thing about the literature we've looked at, we did compare season-long and rotation, they're in the same location, so we can at least address the environmental effects. But the more moisture you have, of course, the more opportunity you have to be more efficient.
Of the second growth,
absolutely. And there are areas of the country we don't get a second growth. Yes, sir, thank you. You're talking livestock performance, right?
Livestock.
Okay.
Individual livestock performance. Just if that's the case, if the literature doesn't support that, that probably is justification for us to say maybe Lynn was getting to this a little bit when he said the long-term effects are you may have improved legumes and the species, the plant species composition might shift to where you would eventually see improved animal performance. I don't know if that was representing your comment, Lynn.
know, I think it's important to understand that, you know, grazing systems, based on the literature, and what, I mean, I've been around a long time, on the average, when you first start a system, your goal should not be to improve livestock performance. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Unless your season-long pasture is overgrazed, unless your pastures or you're consuming the level to where become where now intake becomes affected, then you'll see a difference. But if they're grazed to be properly managed, you're not going to see it in the short term. The data out of North Dakota, South Dakota that went for 25 years, there was three of them for 25 years, they actually saw improvement in livestock performance. Because I think it takes some time for that system to work and to get this consistent lack of this consistent less mature plants on the landscape where you got more quality over time. But it takes time to do that, especially with rangelands, because you have this mixture of wolfy plants and immature plants, and it's just the nature of that beast. But
how